Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And BroadwayInChicago.com and The Color Purple. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Is it taking over? Created, is it too much for me? And I feel ashamed that my love is misdirected, and I feel afraid we become so disconnected, and I'm crushed again by my
head. And you're listening to Windy City Queer Cast. This is show number 106. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
How warm are you today?
Oh, Peter, it's so beautiful.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful.
This is why we're in Chicago, people.
I know. Thank God. You know, and I don't want to rain on your parade, but it doesn't look like we're going to have really possibly the driest of holiday weekends coming
yeah.
up. But just, you know, people take off work. That's what I say.
Yeah, do take off work and enjoy it. Take a personal day. That's why you have them.
That's why you have them. I don't have personal days. I have a hard time taking time off.
Why?
I don't know. Is it because I'm so self-important that I think if I take... Seriously, I honestly think it's just because my ego is too big and I feel like if I take time off that the world is going to collapse.
No, then you don't have a problem taking time off. You have a problem delegating responsibility.
No, it's not about delegating responsibility. I honestly feel like I need to be in the mix because if I don't, everything will fall apart.
And nobody else can take care of it?
Well, I'm not my clients. I don't know how to have my other people work my clients. I don't really have a way to delegate that.
Well, then you tell your clients, hey.
I'm taking a personal
yeah,
day.
Yeah, so you delegate them to the corner for a minute.
Yeah, I know. It's all about my big old ego that...
Work-life balance, you know, is one of the biggest hot topics, I think. I always hear on talk shows and I hear everywhere that so many people are trying to balance what they've got going on in their day job versus what they've got going on in their life versus what, you know, your priority list. You got to eat, you got to sleep, you got to poop, you got to, you know, do all those normal things. But then, you know, oh, I got to get the kids to go do this. Oh, I got to meet with my friends to go do this. Oh, I got to take care of this client. Oh, I got to take, you know, and I think the secret to work-life balance truly is, number one, making as much time for yourself as possible in the day.
Yep.
And that's very hard for many people. It was very hard for me for many years to
yep.
do it. I actually had to take some classes to learn how to do that. And the second thing, and probably the most important thing, is rewarding yourself for taking that time off.
Yeah.
So just because you've
which
taken...
Which doesn't mean like eating Reese cups, which would be how I would do it. I would just eat Reese cups. That would be the reward for anything now that I don't smoke.
Right. But I mean, not just that, just saying, now I have this time off.
Right.
How can I reward myself and enjoy it? I mean, of course, without being a glutton, because
yeah.
you don't just want to eat like 5 pints of Haagen-Dazs, because that's my weakness, the dulce de leche.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, you know, I mean, I look at doing this podcast, like this to me is not work. It's like
absolutely
time.
Not.
It's time I enjoy. I get to talk to fascinating, wonderful people, mm-hmm. many of whom I've been on our show in the past year,
yeah.
some that are coming up that are, you know, very fascinating.
Oh, I love how you got that plug in there. You're
yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
It's pride. We have lots of great people coming up.
We do.
But, you know, and I get to hang with you and that's all good. You know, but I have a harder time, like really just like last night I was so tired and I just really wanted to come home and sit on my couch and be a vegetable. And I feel so guilty. It's so hard for me to do. I am a freak.
That's a reward for you to just to be able to,
yeah.
to veg and, you know, turn the cell phone off,
I know.
Not check your email. Like, you know,
it's so hard. I mean, I'm doing this play, you know, 4 nights a week and that's going great. And that also feels like a reward, like
yeah.
something I get to do that I reward myself with. And, You know, I remember a couple years ago kind of saying, almost self-manifesting, like, I'd like to do some more theater. And
dun, dun, dun.
And it does not, you know, and I meant like, I want to get cast in Wicked. I didn't mean like, you know, I want to be a star, quit my day job. It was kind of what I thought in a weird way in my head. And at the same time, I really just wanted to do work that I enjoyed and felt was important, and
right.
And really wanted to feel stretched and challenged, and I that's really happened for me in the past year and a half, well, which has been so strange, because you just say that, and it took me one of my friends saying, you know, Amy, you told me like less than 2 years ago, I really want to do this more, and if you look back, you've really done this a lot more. So there's some of that stuff too that I kind of go, no, the play gets to be my reward, like watching more television and not being on my email and answering responses, because I guarantee you right now in my saved emails of ones I've read, but I have not responded to, I have 35 to 40 right. emails and I just can't get to them.
Well, when was the last time you went? When was the last time you went? Now, this is a hard one. 48 hours without checking your email.
Oh, good God. 1998.
But
you think I'm kidding. 2 weeks. Never. Never.
No, 48 hours is 2 days.
Oh, 2 days.
Look at you.
Hours.
2 weeks. The world is falling. I haven't checked my email for 2 weeks.
Vacation, which I haven't had in a long time.
Okay, so
that's my
me,
problem. I'm taking a vacation in June. I'm going to Santa Fe, and I will not take my computer with me.
Sometime within the next month, you've got to get at least not one, but two spells of 48 hours without
your
email.
No, I'll have 4 days, because I'm not taking it with me. I have to get through Pride. Okay. I have to get through Gay Idol and Pride, and then I won't.
Okay. It's a very important thing to remove that tether to what you have, because email means responsibility, work orders, blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
X, Y, and
sure
Z that you have to do.
All my work is done by email.
Almost all of our work is, I mean, and I'm speaking about most of the people in the world today who are working at sort of the...
Well, not service industry light, people, but
well,
a lot of us.
I'll call us the light blue collar workers.
There you go.
The light blue collar workers.
The chambray.
Right. The blue gingham collar workers.
The chambray broadcloth workers.
Right. But truly, I mean, learning to enjoy that and accept that is, it's a hard... fucking lesson.
So hard.
It's so difficult.
I'm so much better at it than I used to be.
Me too.
Because here's what I'm better at. What I'm not better at is possibly giving myself much more time. Maybe a little bit. I mean, and there's some progress there. Mm. But what I'm better at is when I'm where I am, 9 times out of 10, I am not trying to think that I'm supposed to be somewhere else, which was my bad curse. Like, I have enjoyed every second of my rehearsals and being at the show. I never don't want to be there.
I mean,
you and I've done like 100 episodes, and I think there's probably been two where I'm like, I got to get out of here, you know?
Right.
And it's maybe even because there's a good reason. But you know, I'm really able to be present where I am. And that's a big change. So, you know, I got to undo about 30 years of how I've done things. So, you know, the fact that that's better, I'm really happy where I am.
And
soon, you sing it, Effie. Pretty soon I will have, you know, bike riding and all that lovely stuff, which you, and baking. I have gardening. That helps for me.
You have gardening. I don't have a garden, so I'm envious.
But you've been biking.
I have. It was funny. We walked out of Spin just a moment ago because I was hanging down there. Meeting with some friends, and I told Amy to come meet me
in the bar
at Spin in the bar right before we came up here to record, and we walk out and she's like, oh my God, your butt
looks really
now,
cute.
I thank you so much.
You should put a video of your ass.
My butt has
podcast.
Looked like that for the last 5 years. It doesn't matter if I'm 170 pounds or I'm 140 pounds, my butt is huge.
Your
it's
butt's
huge.
Not huge, it's so cute. It looks really tight and toned, and I think it's because you're biking so much.
No, it's not. My butt hasn't changed. My calves have changed. My thighs have changed. That's all hard and new.
Yeah, but you don't know when your thighs and your calves change. There's no way that your butt can't lift a little bit and just
I
perk
have
up a little bit.
So much ass. I've
it's
got
so
booty
cute
for
though.
Days.
It's cute though. And let me tell you though, I'm really I have a watchful warning for you.
Uh-oh.
I might need to see your bike seat at some point during this interview or today.
Okay.
Because
it's a prostate issue.
Dr. Oz.
I don't know who that is.
He's, you know, our doctor on the Oprah show.
Oh, Lord.
He comes on once a month, you know, and tells us how our poop should look and stuff like that.
Does he show pictures?
Yes.
Of the poop?
He showed pinworms, which are in your colon the other day. It's crazy. And a tapeworm. He shows really gross stuff
worms?
Now.
Those are those people who let their dogs lick their mouths.
No,
the
they're saying like something like 40% of the 40% of the world will have, or maybe it was America, will have pinworms in their life. That's a lot.
Really? So you have to look at your poop? Do you have to, like,
I guess
dig
so.
Through it?
I don't dig through it.
Okay, anyway, back to the bicycle seat. Anyhow, let's not go there.
Anyhow, but he was talking about, well, first of all, the first tip for you boys out there is that for every, I think he said, for every 10 pounds you lose, you gain an inch of penis length. That is a true story.
Yes.
And he said, though,
I actually did know that because I know where the boy, now that it, that applies if you're over 25.
Okay.
Because if you're under 25, you don't store the fat in the same place as you do when you're over 25.
There you go.
But I do know that. Yes, absolutely.
So then the other thing he was saying was bike riding. And I'm sitting here thinking, God, Lance Armstrong must be impotent. I swear to God.
No.
But anyhow, he said that because of, this is so funny, but if Oprah can say it, I guess I can, or he can say it on Oprah. He said the area between like either the penis and the anus.
The taint.
Or
we call
the,
it the taint.
JJ and the anus.
The taint. That's what we call it. That's okay, the nickname. The taint. Taint.
That area, I can't believe I'm saying
it. Oh, we get
it.
To use the word taint, yay.
That area is a major artery.
It is. It's huge.
And so sitting, if you don't get up with repetition while biking, you cut off the flow of blood to that. Therefore, it causes blood not to go to your penis. Therefore, it affects the sperm. The other thing that affects your sperm is your balls getting hot. See, I love knowing this stuff. I don't know why I love knowing this stuff, except I can share it on the Queercast.
You haven't had balls in years. I mean,
I haven't had balls in years. I know nothing about this, but I was so surprised that they're outside the body so they can stay cool so you can produce a lot of sperm.
Oh
now,
God.
Gay men aren't probably that interested in whether or not they're fertile. I don't know. It depends on if people have, people either have sacred men. I divide men into two categories.
Okay.
You can tell me which category you're in. Have we ever discussed this before?
No, I don't think
so. I can't believe we haven't.
The men with mighty sperm and the men without?
I call it sacred sperm and non-sacred sperm.
No, we had this comp. We had this on
because I think sacred sperm people, guys, it would be guys, obviously, would never be able to like give their sperm to somebody and then just like walk away.
We had this conversation on the radio.
So you're a sacred sperm guy.
I have mighty sperm. My sperm, my babies.
You're my, okay.
My sperm, my babies. That's how I feel, yeah.
So anyhow, I don't know if that's a meaning to you or not, what your sperm count is or your fertility, but watch the bike riding, get up and jiggle, get up and jiggle the taint and get back down.
Well, the good thing is if you have a split seat.
That's what they say. You need that thing with that little like.
Which I have.
Okay, good. Well, I'm just so glad that that is your service and message and your pod snap on that PSA, on the taped PSA here on the Windy City Queercast.
One other thing I have to add to that is most people who bike with their seats way too low. They bike with their seats way too low. Therefore, now all the boys know this. When you pull your legs back and somebody's doing what they need to do, when you're in bed and you pull your legs back, you've exposed more of that sensitive taint-like area.
Okay.
So if your seat
even is, your knees are more to your chest.
If your knees are going more toward your chin, if you're that flexible like I am. So it's the same thing. If you're riding on your bike and your knees are going too high, you're pushing more of that area down.
Yeah.
So what you really need to be able to do, if you can sit on your seat and still stand on your bike without pedaling, your seat is too low.
Huh.
You should actually not be able to stand up and like get on tippy toe, your seat is too low. So most people actually carry their seats way, way, way too low. So the what I learned was raise it about an inch every time you go out to bike ride. And all of a sudden you'll find your ankles don't hurt, your knees don't hurt, your taint don't get sore. But those compression shorts, they keep your balls apart. Did you never have a boyfriend where it was like hanging
there? I did.
Hang on.
Shorts with a pad in ass.
Hang on. Where his, balls are just like hanging low and then you go and you blow on them and they like contract back up.
No, I never did that.
You never did that? It's fun. You got to do it sometime because when they get cold.
No, I don't have to do it sometime. But thank you very much.
When they get cold, they hike back up and it's like you can't even control it. I actually met a boy who could like drop them and pull them back up and drop them.
Wow, calisthenics.
Yeah, I was like, how are you doing that? You have a muscle apparently I don't have access to.
Wow, maybe you're bike riding too much. I don't know. Maybe
I just started.
I'm teasing you.
But it's been beautiful to bike in the city and Mayor Daley has taken such good care of us bikers on the paths and everything. It's so wonderful. I highly recommend that everybody get out and do it just a little bit. Even if you don't have a bike, you can go down to Millennium Park and you can rent bikes and you can zoom around and have a good time.
And this is
there.
Universal information. Obviously, our listeners in Australia and Germany and England, you all just need to know about how to keep your taint all in.
Yeah, keep your taint healthy.
Keep your taint healthy.
Oh my God. There's like a million people I have to tell about the show because they were like, you never talk about the taint, girl.
Well, we did tonight.
We talked about the taint.
We did today. Hey, and
Not speaking of taint, you can't do that.
There's like, there is like,
there's no segue,
Nicola. There
one.
Is no segue
I'm
here
sorry,
for you,
baby,
my dear.
I love you,
but we are so excited. I'm so excited, and Peter got. To
I am too. Amy's not
be
done
introduced
with, I have
to Nicola in this experience. But Nicola Griffith is on the show with us today. She is the lesbian author of many books, but a trilogy now, of which include The Blue Room, Stay, which was a huge bestseller, and her new book, Always. Nicola is going to be at Women and Children First in Chicago. She's going to be in Madison at the WISCON, which is an enormous feminist writer conference, and traveling all over the U.S. And she's British, so maybe she'll come over to jolly old England to you folks as well. But we're talking with her about her life and her writing and her kick-ass character of Aud. If you're not familiar with her lead character, Aud Torvingen, she is kind of a cross between a modern-day Xena slash Lara Croft.
A little bit
slash,
of Xena, a little bit of Kill Bill. Little
yeah,
bit
just
of,
really yeah. an amazing, amazing thriller, exciting fiction writer. And so we're thrilled to have her with us on the show. Plus, lots of news. There's so much going on. We've had some death and some news and some laws and all kinds of things. So stay with us. We'll be back after this.
You love the book. You love the movie. Now the story you love comes to Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Oprah Winfrey presents The Color Purple. Unforgettable characters, a triumphant story, and music that's simply amazing. It's truly the must-see musical event of the year. Now playing at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Tickets still available. Call Ticketmaster. Log on to colorpurple.com. Oprah Winfrey presents The Color Purple, sponsored by Ariel Mutual Funds.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skate.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
It's been 20 years in the making. June 8th, 9th, and 10th. Be a part of history as tens of thousands will join a celebration of equal rights and diversity that will take place on Milwaukee's lakefront. Pride Fest 2007.
Pride Fest.
At Henry Mayer Festival Park. With explosive performances by Chaka Khan. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Comedian Kathy Griffin.
I had a run-in with Whitney Houston. Are you in? Or as I call her, Cracky. Allegedly! Allegedly!
Cascada.
Every time we touch, I get this feeling.
Nikki French.
Total eclipse of the heart.
And over 60 exciting acts on multiple stages of entertainment with the highly anticipated Pride Idol. Get tickets, more information, and the complete lineup now at PrideFest.com. Pride Fest 2007, June 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Summerfest Grounds on Milwaukee's Lakefront. Proudly sponsored by Windy City Media, Pottawatomie Bingo Casino, and Miller Lite. The official beer of Pride Fest. Pride Fest 2007, June 8th, 9th, and 10th. Visit PrideFest.com now. Pride Fest. Pride Fest.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 21st, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The reviews are in. Critics and audiences love Forbidden Broadway, the smash hit musical at the Royal George. The Tribune raves, it's the funniest, fastest 90 minutes in Chicago, bar none. And the Chicago Sun-Times calls it highly recommended. Where else but at Forbidden Broadway can you see 31 of your favorite Broadway shows spoofed in 97 minutes? Direct from New York. For tickets, call 312-902-1500 or go to Ticketmaster.com.
Goodman Theater presents the primary stage Stage's production of In the Continuum. Don't miss this engrossing and surprisingly humorous portrait of two young women, a professional wife and a mother in Zimbabwe, and a floundering 19-year-old in Los Angeles whose lives are suddenly upended by an HIV diagnosis. Playing May 25th through June 24th, tickets at 312-443-3800 or goodmantheater.org.
Pulp is back and better than ever. About Face Theater's deliciously campy homage to the sultry world of lesbian pulp fiction has only two more weeks. It's closing on June 3rd. Join playwright Patricia Kane and the original cast for the return of the hit comedy The Tribune called funny, smart, and eminently entertaining, and the LA Times hailed as a comic bullseye. Get your tickets for Pulp now at aboutfacetheater.com.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com. And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
Yolanda King, the eldest daughter of civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr., passed away in California at the age of 51. Yolanda, an actress, motivational speaker, was involved with the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Nonviolent Social Change, the NAACP, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. An ardent believer in equal rights, she also spoke at the Out and Equal Workplace Summit last September.
President George Bush may veto the hate crimes bill that passed through the U.S. House of Representatives on May 4th. The bill, H.R. 1592, Local Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2007, also known as the Matthews-Shepard Act, would include sexual orientation and gender identity as categories against hate crimes. The measure still needs to be approved by the U.S. Senate before Bush sees it.
And speaking of that bill, a recent Gallup poll revealed that 68% of its respondents are in favor of passing the measure. The breaking down the numbers, it looks like 60% of Republicans and 57% of conservatives, as well as 82% of liberals, approve the bill.
In South Carolina, 18-year-old Andrew Mahler was arrested after he killed 20-year-old Sean William Kennedy in an apparent hate crime. Witnesses contended that Mahler made a disparaging comment about the sexuality of Kennedy, who was openly gay, and then hit him in the face. Authorities believe that Kennedy's head hit a curb or pavement after he collapsed from Mahler's punch.
In New York, Suffolk Superior Court Judge Thomas Connolly has ruled that gay couples from New York who got married in Massachusetts before last July have valid unions because they were joined before New York explicitly prohibited same-sex marriages. Massachusetts allowed same-sex marriages in May of 2004, but out-of-state couples are banned from marrying there if their home states forbid such unions.
Johnny Vera, a 6'4" trans girl who won the prom queen crown at Roosevelt High School in Fresno, California. In her contestant speech, Vera, who won by a 5-1 margin, said, quote, "For me, it's about more than the crown. It's about saying to people, come out and be who you want to be. I am who I am, and I'm proud of who I am."
You go.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, notorious anti-gay minister, the Reverend Fred Phelps of Kansas's Westboro Baptist Church, picketed the funeral of the Reverend Jerry Falwell. Is nobody
hating the haters?
He pickets everyone. On May 22nd in Lynchburg, Virginia, saying, quote, "God hates Jerry Falwell, Billy Graham, Pat Robertson, and all such Arminian heretic preachers, whoa, all of whom have created the satanic sodomite zeitgeist wherein America has irreversibly gone the way of Sodom."
Pod snap.
Wow.
In another Phelps-related item, Warner Chapel Music Incorporated has said that Westboro Baptist Church video for its song God Hates the World, which many of you might have seen on YouTube, infringes on the copyright to the hit We Are the World. An attorney for the church contends that the parody is protected under the First Amendment.
Tammy Faye Messner, formerly Tammy Faye Baker, is down to 65 pounds and said the doctors have stopped treating her. In 96, Messner was first diagnosed with colon cancer, and 3 years ago, she announced the disease had spread to her lungs.
Coley LaFoon, the soon-to-be ex-husband of actress Anne Heche, has called her a bad parent who exhibits, quote, "bizarre and delusional behavior."
No.
Really? Heche released a statement that called her estranged husband a liar. LaFoon filed for a divorce in February after 5 years of marriage, seeking $33,000 a month in support, and wants primary custody of their son, Homer. Of course, Heche dated talk show Ellen... Heche dated talk show host Ellen DeGeneres before breaking up in 2000.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Thank you.
two-time Lambda Literary Award-winning lesbian author, Nicola Griffith, has a new book out. Yes, she does, fans. Lesbian fans, crime thriller fiction fans, rush to your local bookstore. And if you don't even fit in those genres, this is some fantastic writing, characters that you're going to want to know. This time, we continue the journey of one of the great lesbian anti-heroes. Aud Torvingen has the tough veneer of all great warriors, but through her books, The Blue Place, Stay, and this new book, Always, we get closer and closer to Aud's soft center. And I'm so thrilled to have Nicola on the show with us. Hey, Nicola, how are you?
Hi, I'm really good.
Good, and you're in Seattle now.
I am, and the sun is just about to set, and the birds are singing, and I'm happy as a clam.
Well, it's fantastic to have you with us. You know, they say that you should write about what you know, and when anyone knows anything about your history and your travels and your life, we see that that is so true in these three books, this trilogy of books. So let's let people know a little bit about that who may not have read any of your books. Tell us about Aud, this central character in your past three books, The Blue Place, Stay, and this new book, Always. She's one of the most captivating lesbians I think ever written. And how has your heritage, your interests, your travels and where you've lived, how have all of those given birth to this story of Aud?
Wow.
It's a big question.
Big question.
But I'd rather you tell your story than me tell it for them.
Well,
so
I can tell several stories. Let me start with where Aud came from.
Cool.
She came, actually, it sounds trite, but she came to me in a dream. I had just moved to this country to live with my sweetie, Kelly Eskridge, who's also a novelist. So I was living with her in an apartment complex in Duluth, Georgia, which the furthest you can possibly imagine from where the kind of place I grew up.
I know where Duluth is. I'm from East Tennessee, so Atlanta and all these settings and Duluth, I know people in Duluth.
So this is the land of the big hair, the big teeth, the big smile, the big nails.
Don't Google me, Nicola. Don't Google me.
And then all these, all the dykes drive sort of peach-colored cabriolets, and, you know, it's just very weird. Not my kind of place at all. So I was in this yuppie apartment complex with the fountains and the lake, you know, and it was, in fact, quite beautiful. But I fell asleep one night, and I started having this dream about this woman who had just moved into this same apartment complex, except she was the very first person in it, and the whole place was deserted, and she wakes up, she's lying naked on the carpet, she has just moved from another country, so she doesn't even have any light fixtures. I mean, she's literally naked on a carpet in a bare room. She wakes up, and there's a guy with a gun, pointing the gun at her head. And she just wakes up, picks up the flashlight, which is the only thing in the room, breaks his neck, and lies down again. And I woke up thinking, whoa, you know, how the hell can someone go from 0 to 60? Boom, just like that. No hesitation. I mean, she kills this man without blinking, without thinking. And I really wanted to know where she came from. So gradually I went to the library and I would just dipped into random books, and they happened to be books about Norwegian architecture and Norwegian history. And I started thinking, oh, perhaps this woman's Norwegian. And it turned out that in Norwegian history, there's a woman called Aud the Deep-Minded. Mm. And she was from the 9th century. So her name has lasted as someone called Aud the Deep-Minded for 1,100 years. And I thought, that is the kind of person I want to write about. So it all kind of came together, and it turned out that this strange woman who kills people is Norwegian. And then my life, well, I've in fact just written a memoir, so you know that should be out. That will be out next month, and there's a lot more info in that.
But, wow.
My life, I basically got badly beaten when I was 22 in a club, and I had been learning karate, and I did my best to protect my friend who was also getting beaten. In fact, I was being kind of heroic, which is really silly, but, you know, I was doing all the kind of kung fu moves and standing over this woman who'd just been knocked to the ground. And someone came behind me and whacked me with a bottle and then turned me around, broke my nose, cracked my cheekbone. I ended up in hospital. It was kind of sad. Actually, it was really traumatic and made me extremely angry. And the reason I was so angry was that I had been learning karate and I could protect myself and my friend. She was my friend, not my lover. But I couldn't hit these people back. I couldn't bring myself to hit these people. And it infuriated me. I can't tell you how angry I was. A, that I've been beaten because I've been done all sorts of things in my life and never got hurt. I was beginning to think I was invulnerable. I got really hurt, and I knew that karate wasn't the answer, so I went off and found women's self-defense. I kind of taught myself, learned from other people in a little self-help group that we formed, and then I started teaching it. So I taught self-defense for 5 years, and Al knows all this stuff. She's a martial arts expert. She's very familiar with all things self-defense-ish, and she can blow things up and stuff too, which I can't. Well, I've never tried. I did set some houses on fire by mistake once when I was a kid.
Oh, no.
By mistake, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
So how does this, because this is a big part of Always, the new book, these self-defense classes, and tell about, how you wanted to incorporate that in this chapter in Aud's journey.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about the book. It's basically, there are two narrative lines. I say the narrative lines, but they're kind of like separate novels almost. One's set in the past, and that's the self-defense lessons, and one's set in the present, which is basically just chapters, an ordinary book set in Seattle. But the past is all about these lessons that Aud teaches these southern women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Aud has taught, she used to be a police officer, so she's taught police rookies, you know, come-alongs and takedowns and all sorts of pressure points and things like that. And she kind of expected teaching women to be a bit like that, except a tighter focus on how to punch exactly and so forth. But she was absolutely unprepared for how these women are just so trained in being nice. I mean, these are straight southern women, and their entire training is this gendered stuff about how you have to put other people first, and you shouldn't take up space, and you should always welcome people into your lives, and you must smile, 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 and smile. And she has a really tough time trying to teach these women that the point of self-defense is, well, the key word really is self. It's self-assertiveness, self-esteem, self-confidence. And she, one of the things she tells her people is, if you walk into a bar and there's a man with a knife, what do? Walk out again. It's not, she's trying to persuade these women that self-defense isn't all about the fancy moves. It's not about winning. It's not about fighting. It's about surviving. And self-defense is very ordinary, except, of course, this is a novel, so it doesn't end up being ordinary. It ends up with blood on the floor, actually blood on the ceiling,
right?
Blood everywhere.
Right. You know, that's one of the things I am curious about, because in reading, you know, if you go back and you read all three of these books, I mean, even starting with The Blue Place, and there is something that has happened to this character, as does anyone with a life and the people that come into it. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. The characters of Julia and Kick and other people who've come into her life. But was there ever a hesitation in writing a character? I mean, I hear now the dream and what the impulse was, the idea, the kind of kernel, the genesis of the whole thing. But was there ever a hesitation in writing a lesbian character that is so violent that, then did it become, I guess it's a two-part question, but you do definitely show a distinction between violence and self-defense. But I just wondered, because it's always such a touchy subject, you know, we see in movies and films, like, why does the gay character have to be the killer? Why does the gay character have to be? So I'm just curious if there was ever a time when you thought about this, or if that has influenced how you've written this character in all three books.
You know, the for me, the interesting thing is that I never actually think of Aud as being violent. I mean, people say, oh my God, she's a tough dyke, she's violent. And I'm like, well, to me, she's more elemental. She's a force of nature. She's very natural. I mean, to her, violence is, it's like nature is violence, like the lightning strike or the seal eating the penguin or something. It's not malicious. It's not
right.
Personal. She's actually very impersonal with violence. She's more a protector of the weak than a tormentor of
yeah.
the weak.
There's a reflexive quality to her too, which I noticed a lot of what she was, you know, the whole scene where it's like, okay, you're lying in your bed and if you hear somebody enter your house, mm-hmm. you know, what would you do? Well, I have a bat under my bed. Well, can you get to that bat if the lights are turned out? Okay, are you sleeping in any clothes? Well, probably not. Well, can you mm-hmm. get to some clothes with the lights? You know, that whole, mm-hmm. it's like, how do you make this be a part of your reflexive, instinctual nature?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing that she's trying to teach these women in the book is that self-defense is really, really, really ordinary. It's about change. It's not changing your behavior exactly. It's like tweaking your behavior. It's like when we're little, we learn to cross the road safely. You know, we look left and then right and then left again, and then we proceed smoothly to cross the road. I mean, that's just what self-defense is like. It's like we all learn that when we get in the car, we fasten our seatbelt. But in a self-defense class, you would learn also that you would park your car under a light, and before you get in the car, you would just quickly glance in the back seat, and then once you get in the car, you would lock the door. And that takes an extra probably second and a half, but it could save your life. I mean,
yeah.
Self-defense is much more about this just step-by-step sensible behavior
right.
than anything else.
So I guess in writing about this complex character who you've just woven these wonderful, wonderful layers and layers upon layers of stuff, what's kind of your goal with writing about Aud for you? Is it you saying, hey, ladies, listen up, you got to learn self-defense? Or is this like a catharsis for you? What, or maybe there's multiple goals, but writing such a complicated character, it takes a lot of energy, creative energy to do it. But for you, what are you getting out of writing this?
Oh, for me, it's purely a blast. I mean, I'm a complete addict. Writing is an addiction to me. This is not worthy stuff at all. It's not like I want people to learn. Of course I do, but, you know, that's such a minor consideration for me. I just want people to fall into this book and come out the other end going, whoa!
Yeah.
Awesome!
And they do.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's lots of sex. There's lots of violence. Mm-hmm. There's some... a little bit of fashion, but she likes to wear sharp clothes.
Yeah,
she's deadly with her hands. You know, in all ways that you could think of.
That's very good for a lesbian hero.
Yeah, I mean, she's actually. I find her. Part of me is fascinated by her. I think, well, wow, she's kind of cool. But part of me thinks, if she knocked on my door, I would hide under the bed. You know, she's just a bit too. Seamless for me. I mean, where mm-hmm. are her weak points? She's 6 feet tall. She's independently wealthy. She's totally competent. She's good looking. She has fashion sense. Her parents are, well, one's dead, but her mum is really well connected.
Right.
She's
a major character.
She's smart, but she is vulnerable in the sense that she's kind of, I think childlike is the wrong word, but she's very much an innocent in a peculiar way. She's only just really learning how to be a real person.
Go on. No, you go ahead.
Where was I?
You were saying she's an innocent, she's just learning, and then I interrupted.
Right. She's, she in The Blue Place, she's never loved anyone, and then she falls in love, and that makes her vulnerable. She has to let people in,
mm-hmm.
and then stay after her lover is dead. She has to figure out whether she wants to remain vulnerable. And then in all ways, of course, she's in this place now where she has to deliberately choose whether or not to allow herself to fall in love again and go through this whole possibility of loss again. I mean, I don't see loss in her future, but, you know, that's always a possibility with love. I mean,
well, it's interesting because you talk about the character of Julia, which is the lover that that dies and then stay is such a beautiful and poignant. I mean, you've really allowed yourself, you say that she's seamless, but you've really allowed yourself to reveal these cracks, these kind of chinks in the armor that is really, you know, shows some vulnerability and shows the choices that she is making and that sometimes the old ways are not working for her. And, you know, one is in this new book and always this character of Kick, and you introduce, you know, you talk about multiple sclerosis, which you live with as well. And it's once again, writing what you know. And yet, how did that come to being a topic that you wanted to pull into this story?
Well, actually, I didn't want to pull it into the story at all. I mean, MS is so huge in my life. I like, when I write, I like to not play with it at all. I like to just kind of walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I started writing this book, and then here was this woman who's very physically fit. I'm talking about Kick now,
right.
A woman Ad falls in love with.
It's a great name.
And, yeah, and thanks. And I saw her walking away from one room to another, and she was limping in my head. And I thought, oh, well, maybe an old injury or something, because she is a stunt performer. And so I kept exploring, and then, you know, gradually it dawned on me that she was sick. So then I immediately started kind of backing away from that, thinking, okay, she's sick. Then it'll be something temporary, or it'll be something completely unlike MS. And I did all sorts of mental gymnastics, trying not to talk about MS, but it was such a lie.
Yeah,
it was so clear that in fact somewhere way back in my subconscious, I had attached MS to this character, and that's just the way it had to be. And it was actually kind of, I didn't like it. I didn't like talking about it publicly. I mean, Kick's MS is not quite the same as my MS, mainly because mine is far more advanced than hers. But it's actually quite scary and makes me feel a bit vulnerable to go there on the page, because writing is so revealing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a very brave thing of you to do, because you know, you're coming at it from the other perspective too, when you have this primary character who is you know, it might be more the perspective of your partner in relation to the illness, or, you know, the people who love you in relation to MS, as opposed to your relationship to it.
Yeah, I've often wondered if I would be brave enough to deal with Kelly being ill the way that I sometimes am ill. I mean, it takes a lot of guts to just hang in there. You know? And so, this was my opportunity to explore that, to see if, you know, how brave I could be in this particular way. And certainly Aud seems to be brave enough. I still, you know, the jury on whether I would be brave enough to find out, but hopefully we'll never have to find out. But you know, Aud is certainly brave enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you know, your books are thriller, they're crime fiction, they're suspense, they're this whole kind of genre. Was this, you know, people have referenced her as like a classic noir character. Was this a genre that you thought you would write based on movies, films, books, you know, things that were of interest to you, or was this dream and this character just so loud and present in the room that this is, you know, the genre that you kind of entered into?
Okay, that seems to be a two-part question. First of all, I don't think this book is noir. I mean, my publisher calls it noir, everyone else calls it noir, and I'm like, well, excuse me, hold on. The author is like, it's a novel, and to me, noir is kind of like the horror fiction of the crime genre. Noir is all about people who make a mistake, and then in trying to rectify that mistake, they dig themselves deeper and deeper, and everything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And my books are about, well, to me anyway, the reader, of course, it's up to them to judge what they think it's about, but to me, my books are about change and growth and expansion, and there's a lot of joy in them. There's a lot of angst, but, you know, there's a lot of joy, too. And so in that sense, I don't see them as noir, except, of course, there's lots of that light and shadow and cool, stylized stuff.
It may be some of the tone, you know. I don't really feel like the style, but the tone of some, you know, just images. Like when I watch the movie in my head that is only mine when I read one of your books, you know, that shadows, that's a really good analogy. I mean, you get it from the very early part of The Blue Place.
The Blue Place is a bit more noir-y than the others. But the whole point of writing these books to me was to find out from that dream, who is this woman? Where does she come from? How did she get to be this way? And now, of course, I'm learning all this. I'm having the best time watching her change and watching to see how far outside her original box can she go and still remain her.
Have there been any plans to film any of these three books, or potentially a mini series of all three, which I think is potentially?
I would love to see out either in some huge big blockbuster movie or as a series, you know, like a Showtime or an HBO kind of series.
Ooh. Yeah,
I would love to see that, but right now, I get nibbles every now and again, and as soon as I start talking, people fade into the mist. It's kind of difficult to imagine how this would be filmed. Actually, structure-wise, it's easy enough. I would be very happy to figure out how to do that. It's who could be the main character, because the whole point of these books is Aud.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally have never met a woman who can move like Aud. The only person I've ever seen on the screen who can move like Aud is Jet Li. And bless him, he's just not really a lesbian. No.
Would be a stretch.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, you think, you know, when you were talking at this time, and I've never thought about this, but just hearing you kind of describe her, you know, I thought, how interesting that these Bourne movies have kind of happened. The Matt Damon, Damon's not a lesbian either, but that kind of instinctual, reflexive quality that those films have, you know, I mean, obviously there's been comparisons to Lara Croft and other characters like that, but Jet Li, you just need a lesbian Jet Li, who's Norwegian and blonde.
I've joked with Kelly. I said, you know, if someone offered me enough money for these books, honestly, if someone offered me, you know, $2 million, I would say, yep. I said, well, what if it was Clint Eastwood? I'd say, hell, you know, Clint Eastwood could play out. I don't care. If I have $2 million, I'll write something else. It's not a problem. So I'm afraid I might let this slide down a bit there. I just don't. You know, when it comes to paying a mortgage and feeling secure and knowing that I can cover my healthcare costs and buy really nice champagne.
Call Quentin Tarantino. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Quentin Tarantino might be your director. I think so.
I would love to see one of the, oh God, what's his name? I forget his name. He directed, and now, of course, all those wonderful Asian
Peter will know. Crouching Tiger.
Epic. Yeah. Like,
or The Curse of the Golden Flower. Who did that? He just had a new film come out. I can't remember his name. But I mean,
it's usually got Lee Gong in it and Ji Zhao.
Ang Lee is the one who did Brokeback Mountain, but he also did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and some of those movies. So he's done the gay cowboy, and he's done, you know, martial arts films. Yeah. He's perfect.
It's time for him to do the lesbian Norwegian martial artist.
Yes, for Showtime. Get rid of the L word and have this instead. It wouldn't be more interesting to me.
Well, the guy who directed 300, I think that would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Greengrass, I think.
Sounds right.
Yeah, now that would be great.
Well, we just need to draft a letter. Hey, folks, you can, you should definitely pick up the new book. It's called Always. It continues the journey of Aud, and or pick up all three of the books, The Blue Place, Stay, Always, and all of Nicola's other writing. Always is out currently on Riverhead Books, and Nicola will be in Madison, Wisconsin at A Room of One's Own on Sunday, May 27th at 2 o'clock, and also at the WisCon May 24th through the 28th in Madison, or she'll be in our backyard here in Chicago at the Fabulous Women and Children First on May 29th at 7:30, and the entire book tour, and I guess information on this memoir that I did not know about. Your publicist did not tell me. You can go and get all kinds of information and email, you know, thoughts and feelings at NicolaGriffith.com. And I encourage you to do that. It's NicolaGriffith.com. And we will have that linked on our site. Nicola, thank you so much for being on with us, and let us know when the memoir is out. That will be quite fascinating to read as well.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Yes, memoir's out next month.
Fantastic. Thanks for continuing this fantastic story and this character for all of us.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.